Hello and welcome to another exciting and jam-packed episode of Modern Day Philosophers. I'm your host, Danny Lobel. Thank you for choosing this podcast to listen to. But before I say anything else, take a listen to this quick word from our sponsor. I think you're going to like it.
Warning, stand-up records may cause intestinal distress, fits of insane laughter, instant diarrhea, existential malaise, headaches, nausea, dizziness, vomiting, seasonal affective disorder, more headaches, pneumomono-ultramicroscopic silico-volcanoconiosis. Stand-up records should not be handled by women who are pregnant, may become pregnant, have ever been pregnant, or personally know anyone who has been pregnant. Do not consult your doctor if he's operating heavy machinery. Stand-up records is for external application only. And stand-up records is, of course, good for a few laughs. So remember that standuprecords.com for the world's finest comedy CDs, DVDs, and merchandise. That's standuprecords.com. The revolution will be hilarious.
How about that? How about that? The one and only stand-up records. Go pick one up today. I was involved in a bit of a car accident. I was in the passenger seat. Somebody else was driving. Someone I know. And wound up in a three-car collision. Got hit right by the passenger seat. It could have been a lot worse, but thank God all I got is some whiplash, which is, you know, still bad, but could have been a lot worse. And I'm grateful that it wasn't. But I've been kind of just hanging in bed for the last few days recovering. So I thought, why not have Kylie help me with the intro? You guys never hear from Kylie. And it would take some of the burden off of me for setting up the episode today because I'm not quite 100% with it. So here's Kylie.
Hello, people. It's nice to be on the show. Thank you guys for tuning in. And Danny always talks about how you guys write him in and how grateful he is for that. And he's always happy when he receives some fan mail. So thank you. And I know this will cheer him up when he's feeling down because of his neck. So please write him in. Wish him well. Keep him in your prayers and hope that he gets better.
Yeah. Keep me in your prayers.
Do it.
I always think that's funny when people say, keep me in your prayers. Like, I'm going to remove this guy from my prayers.
You know, actually, I pray every night a Jewish prayer called the Shema. And it was very sad after, because I pray for everyone I know and love. And I pray for the animals. And after Sonia, our chicken, died a few weeks ago, I did remove her from the prayers. And that was very sad. So I wanted to keep her in, but I just say no, you know, please. Yeah. Now I say, please make sure Sonia is happy in chicken heaven.
Chicken heaven. That's I wonder what chicken heaven is like. They can fly for one thing. Yeah.
Sonia could fly pretty well. She would fly onto the ledge and try to escape. And I remember the first time she laid an egg for us. The dogs were hanging out and messing with her, and she flew up to our dining room table and laid us an egg. And that was pretty cool.
Yeah, she laid an egg right on the table. So Kylie and I have been having a good time. Aside from the car accident, before that, we went to Phoenix and I did a TEDx talk, which was a lot of fun. I was talking about chickens. They wanted me to tell my chicken story that I told years ago on NPR and This American Life. They'd heard it and they brought us out there. And it's funny how, like, things go in cycles, because now Kylie and I have been invited to go in November to the UK to a convention of archaeologists and anthropologists who are studying the effects that chickens have had on different cultures throughout history. And to break it up, they thought, let's bring a comedian. So, you know, this because of a chicken, I'm going to be flying. How about that? Yeah. All right, so Kylie, why don't you set up who's on the show today?
All right, today on the show is Dawn Luby, and Danny and I went to see her. We got invited to see her at the UCB here in LA, which, you know, that's a lot of acronyms. It's the Upright Citizens Brigade in Los Angeles, and she she does this show called My 1992 Diary. Originally, it was a Tumblr where she would post diary entries from 1992 when she was, you know, in elementary school. And it was super funny. She's this tall, lanky girl. And it's just hilarious to me because it's basically my childhood. You know, we had the same bubbly handwriting. We did the same things in our diaries, like say curse words that we thought were funny. And just as a white lady, I really related, you know. It's very...
It's not too, there's not too much out there for white ladies.
No, no. I mean, you know, you go and you see Bill Burr, and I love him. I don't relate to him. But Dawn, I definitely related to that. Maybe also Maria Bamford. That's another white lady comedian that I really relate to, with all the, you know, the dance moves and just mayonnaise sandwiches. It's a very white lady thing to do. So I loved it. And Dawn came over and she was super funny and talks about being raised on a farm. And she actually, you know, an hour in, we Danny and Dawn get into her super dark past. So
don't give away the whole interview.
Well, it's a preview to get them going, to get them to tune in.
All right. Well, I wanted you to mention it because I thought it was cool that you were laughing out loud at her show, which you come to comedy shows with me all the time for the past 5 years, and I never see you laugh out loud. So after that, I was like, we got to get her on the show.
That's a lie. You just don't see me laughing from the audience when you're on stage. That's enough. All right. After the intro song, let's get this going with Dawn.
You're very cute on the mic. Kylie never does this kind of stuff. All right, cool. Yeah, like Kylie said, enjoy the show. Without further ado, right after the intro song.
Hello and welcome to Modern Day Philosophers.
Modern Day Philosophers.
Having failed to pay attention in school, Danny Lobel, now older and wiser, will attempt to learn basic philosophy 101. Our young hero will be joined by today's top comedians, philosophers all their own. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Danny Lobel.
Modern Day Philosophers.
I'm sitting here in my living room with Dawn Lueb.
Luby. Yeah, the weirdest way you can imagine that name being is
Luby. Like, yeah. I wasn't going to say lube.
No.
But do people say lube?
Yeah, you know, they say it all sorts of ways.
Because it's of actually, the spelling.
Yeah, it's a kind of common name in Nebraska, but I don't think anyone outside of Nebraska has that last name. So no one knows what to do with it.
I didn't even know there were things that were specific to Nebraska.
Yeah, I think, you know, not a ton, but there's, like, I'd say a lot of, like Jell-O salads is something that I think is very, very...
What is that?
You find them at a lot of, like, funeral potlucks, just tables and tables of Jell-O salads, which is... They call it salad, but there's usually not any kind of produce in there, but it's, like, just Jell-O with, like, marshmallows and candy and sometimes, like, shredded carrots.
Wow. I've never seen anything like that.
You know, that's okay, I think. It's one of those things that you haven't heard of for a reason.
Mm-hmm. What else is Nebraskan? I know Johnny Carson.
Johnny Carson. I think he's Nebraska's most well-known export.
Okay.
There is a lot of tornadoes. A lot of tornadoes there. Mm-hmm. Oh, the McRib sandwich was invented in Nebraska.
But are there other things that are Nebraskan colloquialisms? Like,
People pronounce the word measure as measure.
Measure?
Yeah.
In Did you measure that suit yeah, properly
yeah,
as in that?
Yeah.
Well, I like that. Measure.
Measure. Italian, not Italian.
People really say Italian?
Oh, yeah. Let's get some Italian food. And it took me, like, very, very long to sort of realize that these were not the correct way of saying those words. So.
Everybody, are there Jews in Nebraska?
Not many.
Not many.
I knew one Jewish family growing up and went to a bar mitzvah.
Okay.
But no one knew what was going on or how to behave. But it was really fun. It was like a wedding.
Is it a big church going place?
Very, yeah. Okay. Yeah, very big church going. There's, you know, a lot of small towns that have like three churches and a bar. And
was your town one of them?
I grew up in Lincoln, which was, you know,
that's the big city.
That's the hub, yeah. It's no Omaha, but
okay.
What is? yeah, so Lincoln's a small city, so you know, it's kind of centered around the university. And
I'm absolutely fascinated by Nebraska. Like, this whole world that you come from is so different than where I'm from.
Different from New York a little.
Yeah, I mean, you moved to New York, so you got to see my world.
Yeah, yeah.
But I never got to, I've never been to Nebraska. And I like the way people eat Jell-O salads and go to church potlucks and say Major and Italian. It's just like, it sounds, it's like a different world to me. It's so exciting.
It is exciting. I think I didn't appreciate Nebraska until I left it. You know, I go back there and it's just flat for as far as you can see, and it's very pretty and calm in its own way, and everything's slower. And
people are knitting sweaters, I imagine. Does that happen?
Well, I'm sure some people are knitting sweaters.
Big pine trees on the sweaters, like pine tree sweaters.
Yeah, everyone in Nebraska is just wearing pine tree sweaters.
Easter's got to be a big deal if there's all these churches and everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Huge deal.
So what goes on Easter?
Well, you know, everyone gets the Easter baskets and then go to church. We would, you know, bring irises from my grandma's farm to church sometimes on Easter.
Your grandma had a farm?
It was a dairy farm, so there was a lot of cows.
Okay.
There was a few different buildings, one for hay, one to store the combines.
The combines is the poop?
No.
What is it?
Combines. There's no poop building.
I thought maybe it's stored for fertilizer.
No, but so the combines are like machinery to like harvest the crops.
Okay.
They grew corn and soybeans.
Okay.
And
so there's a hay building, building.
Yeah, there's a milk where they milked the cows. It was, by the time I was little, you know, it was pretty non-operational, so there was
People milked?
I think it was a couple. My mom's like uncle's side of the family kind of took over the operation, so they did more of the milking and stuff.
Did you milk the cows?
I didn't. I can't really claim to be as much of a farm girl as I would like to.
Were there chickens?
No.
I love chickens.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I had a chicken that passed away recently.
It was in the backyard. Had a chicken here?
Yeah.
How was that?
Oh, she was great.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Anyway, this is beautiful. I got this great picture painted in my mind of Nebraska that's Jell-O. Did you have Jell-O salad at your grandma's house? Did these things exist together? Yes.
Absolutely. My grandma really specialized in one that was orange Jell-O with mini marshmallows and carrot slices. That was kind of her go-to.
And carrots complement the color of the Jell-O.
Yeah, yeah. It was all about the color. And.
Was your grandma? Is she still with you?
Yeah.
What's her name?
Tina. Well, her real first name is Laura, but she always hated that name. She thought it was a weird name. So she went by her middle name, which was Albertina.
Albertina.
Yeah.
And then people just called her Tina.
Yeah.
So you're this girl in Nebraska. You're doing dance recitals and eating Jell-O and hanging out on a farm. And I guess it's probably not the typical thing to go and be a comedian from there, right?
Yeah. I think that's safe to say. There wasn't a lot of exposure to comedy in comedians growing up. I mostly did like children's theater, you know, and I played a lot of birds. I played a goose in Charlotte's Web and a rooster. And I sort of like feel like that was where I started with comedy, was playing all of these birds. I think when I was younger, I thought more about like being a serious actor.
Okay.
Because that was something
that's like the American dream.
Yeah, it's like you go to New York and you become an actor.
So that's why you went to New York.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. My first professional acting job was I played a very, very tall bridesmaid in Tony and Tina's Wedding for way longer than I should have, about 5 or 6 years.
That long?
Yeah.
Do you get paid to do that?
Yeah.
Is it enough to live off in New York?
Nope. I had always a series of weird and random day jobs that I cobbled together. I feel like in New York, the hardest thing is like a in trying to make it in, you know, is in acting and comedy and stuff is finding the right day job that allows, that doesn't get in the way, that allows you to go on an audition or do a shoot or leave for 6 weeks because you got a show and mm-hmm. I don't know, or at least for someone like me who is working part of the time but not all of the time,
right
you know. And I think in New York that's a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah, the challenge is always to get a job for money that you don't care about.
Yeah,
so you could do a job for no money that you do care about.
Exactly. It's funny because really for years I worked at this like finance firm, you know, part-time, and but I could always leave for long periods of time, so it was great. But at one point when I got this book deal and I got a few other acting jobs kind of all at once last year, and I decided that I would quit. Mm-hmm. And that was it was terrifying because it was such a good day job and something I had spent so long in New York trying to find.
Mm-hmm.
And, but what my husband said to me, he said, you know, I was 33 at the time. You're 33. At some point, your job and your career need to be the same thing.
Mm.
So
it's good advice.
I was like, it was a little like painful at the time. It felt like a mean thing to say, but I think it's true. I had to sort of make that decision in my head where this is like, I am an actor and comedian and writer, and that is my career and my job. And then it's this weird thing, but I quit and I made that mental transition, and it just made a difference. And I feel like it brought a little more work to me. I'm not, you know, making it big, but
you're doing it.
Yeah. And I think that, I don't know, I had never really thought of that before, even though it's a very obvious statement probably.
When you probably first came to New York, it was obvious to you. And then it's like, well, you have to do this now, and you have to do that now, and you have to pay rent and this and that.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, like, everything gets skewed and weird, and you don't know what you're doing anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and such a small percentage of your day and your time and energy is going to the thing that you're in New York to do.
Right.
So, yeah. And then 15 years goes by, and you're like, wow.
But you had some cool experiences.
I did, yeah.
You got to date Joe Franklin.
I did, totally by accident. I found myself at 22 dating Joe Franklin.
You put that in an email to me, so I have to ask about it.
Yes.
You mentioned a little bit that it was from, you were at Tony and Tina's wedding.
Yeah, I was doing that show, and it was in the beginning when I was probably 22, maybe 23. I don't know how I was in the show, because everyone was like authentic Italian New Yorkers, and I like couldn't pass for that no matter how hard I tried.
Yeah.
And but I was like this super tall bridesmaid, and it wore like huge heels and was paired with a short guy.
Okay.
Which is basically every job I've gotten in acting comedy. And so Joe Franklin had come to the show. I have no idea why. And I didn't know who he was because I wasn't from New York. I was like 22 and
mm-hmm.
I didn't know he was like this legend uh-huh. in New York. But meanwhile, like the whole cast who grew up in New York were like flipping out. They're like, oh my God, Joe Franklin. This is so cool. And so after the show, the show went well, whatever. I was leaving and he was in front of the theater and he gave me his card. He's like, you're a real Amazon woman. And I said, thank you, Jim Franklin. And he's like, why don't you stop by my office sometime? I want to talk to you. You're real funny. You're a great gal. And so I was ecstatic. And I went home and, like, looked him up. And I was like, oh, my God. He, like, had all these, like, crazy legends on his show. And sort of I figured out who he was. So the next day I called him and he's like, oh, yeah, stop by the office. And I showed up and he's like, one moment. And then he like disappeared into like the labyrinth of papers. And he comes back and he has these like two red patent leather like platform shoes out that were like huge like drag queen shoes. And he's like, put these on. I was like, okay. But he also had this, like, there was also in his office was this tiny Russian man who was like 80 years old with a violin just hanging out. Like, I don't think he spoke English. So I was a little, you know, intimidated, but also really excited to like be meeting Joe Franklin. So I put on the shoes and then I was like 7 feet tall and he kind of like pulls me over to like, so we're both kind of standing facing this full length mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, like, stands next to me, and he says, "Would you look at that?" And then he did this thing, and this is so weird. And I have only, like, respect and admiration for Joe Franklin. I don't want to, you know. But he, like, took my hands, put them on his face, and he said, "Repeat after me. Daddy's gonna take care of you." And so I said that, and because I was like 22 and extremely naive, and I was like, "Daddy's gonna take care of me." And I continued going there for probably 4 or 5 months, like once a week, and I thought it was like maybe a little weird. We'd like go out to this French restaurant, La Rivage, and we'd go to like that restaurant he had on 8th Avenue and like eat.
I used to do shows there all the time. You probably, what year was this?
This was 2004, probably.
I probably saw you guys there at one point.
Probably. We went like once a week, probably. But we'd like go see like Broadway shows and like magic shows.
Uh-huh.
We went to some magic shows.
Mm-hmm.
And he would always do that thing where he's like, "Daddy's gonna take care of you."
Did he take care of you?
I mean, he like paid for my cab rides a lot.
That is taking care of you, technically.
He like got all these tickets to shows, so you know, that seemed nice. And yeah, it kind of ended because he tried to set me up with a friend of his who was like in his 70s who like wanted me to go to a Rod Stewart concert in the Hamptons. And I decided maybe it was time to sort of have some distance from Joe Franklin.
So you never kissed him or anything?
No, he would kind of like if we were in a cab, he might kind of like put his hand on my thigh or something, but it never was like, I never felt like it was that creepy.
These are dating tactics from the 20s.
No. He was never really disrespectful.
That's good.
And
just a little creepy with the
dead. Just a little creepy. But hey, he also, like, when I'd be in his office, he like, loved that I was from Nebraska. And he'd be like, "Let's call your parents in Nebraska."
Really?
So we would call them on speakerphone.
Did they know who he was?
They had to look him up.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, he's clearly not that like creepy or trying to like take advantage of me if we're calling my parents from his office.
Maybe that's one of the things.
Yeah. And then, yeah, my family came out for Thanksgiving that year and he gave my brother and sister collectible coins. And we all went to dinner. So he took care of us, you know.
Daddy took care of you.
Daddy took care of us.
Inside the dating life of Joe Franklin.
I know.
Old men need love too.
They do.
And he didn't molest you or anything. So.
No, I never felt like I wasn't in control of the situation.
That's good.
Yeah.
So good for him.
Yeah, why not?
You got some companionship, you got some free dinners, and
I did.
There's nothing wrong with that.
And a good story,
I guess.
Yeah, a
really good story. Joe Franklin.
I know, such a character. Oh,
who else came to the show? Did a lot of famous people come to that show?
No, not too many. You know, as it turns out. But there was a couple that come to mind right away that I got very excited about. One was Tino Martinez, the New York Yankee.
Oh, cool.
He
yeah,
came
I know
with
Martinez
his wife.
Is, yeah.
He was very dreamy. And afterwards, like, he and his wife like went and we all got drinks and stuff.
You went out for drinks with Tino Martinez?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And the other one, this is not a famous person, but I remember being like very blown away. I was it was the woman who came up with the jingle for Glade plugins, that like plug it in, plug it in.
How do you know it was her? She told you, or
yeah, because
we just recognized her from her Wikipedia.
No, I'm obsessed with her, and she's my favorite famous person.
I can imagine her being huge in Nebraska.
That wouldn't be surprising. No, like with the show, we just sit down and like talk with the audience, and so somehow that came up, and
she came up with plug it in. That's yeah. I wonder if she was going around the house singing it. Did you find out the details of how do you make?
No, I just sort of found out that that's who she was, and then ran around and told the rest of the cast.
That's really I'm excited about
the Glade plugin lady is here.
I want to be a jingle writer.
Yeah.
I could come up with jingles. I think I'd be great at it. I don't know how to break in.
I don't either. Maybe I wish I could put you guys in touch, but I didn't get her information.
Glade lady. I want to know more about your family. You mentioned that you have siblings, brothers?
Yeah, I have an older brother who's a year and a half older, and then a younger sister who's 10 months younger.
Are you close also? Do you talk on the phone all the time?
Yeah, I'm close with my sister especially. Mm-hmm. She's up in Seattle. I met my husband through my sister. They were friends.
Ah. What about your brother?
He works in real estate. He lives in Lincoln.
Does he have his photo on benches?
No. It's in the paper sometimes. It's like top 25.
Why do realtors agents always have headshots? I always wonder that.
I don't know.
It's like they can't accept that they're not in showbiz.
Maybe most of them like used to be in showbiz.
It always feels like they really want to be in showbiz, but they don't want to commit to like worrying about like what would it be like, you know, to live this uncertainty. They're like, I want a stable job. But yeah. I want a headshot.
It's true, though. There's very few, you know, careers where you have your picture on your card.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's always a quote from someone you've never heard of next to them. Like, she gets the job done, you know?
Yes. Yeah, it's in quotes, but there's no person attributed to the quote. Like...
You're like, okay.
All right.
You know, it's such a funny thing. People work their whole life just going into the same job every day to pay off this crazy mortgage, this giant towering amount of money. And then, you know, it's their biggest investment is their home. And then when it comes time to sell it, they're like, I like the picture on the bench.
Right.
Then I'll go with that one.
She has nice eyebrows. We'll go with her.
Such a strange thing. It's a whole lifetime of work.
Yeah.
You'd think you'd really go for like, okay, I got to find the like shrewdest business.
The most
business
experience. No.
I just want someone with a friendly face.
That gets the job done. Because it says so right on their card.
Oh, man. All right. Here we go. The philosopher that Alex picked out for you is someone named Chrysippus. I don't know. It's spelled Chrysippus. And I have a phonetical thing. It says Chrysippus.
All right. I'm not familiar with Chrysippus.
I'm not either. But he says that Don's book is about looking back. I mentioned it a little earlier in my 1992 diary. Do you want to tell people a little bit about it before we go forward?
Yeah, sure. So the book actually started as a blog where I was posting pictures from like pages of my 1992 diary and then writing comedic commentary about them. And, you know, it wasn't, other people have certainly done it. You know, there's the whole mortified movement. And I just sort of, I found these diaries and thought it would be fun for my friends and family to see them. So I put them up. And then it kind of took on this life of its own and it sort of exploded in the way that the internet occasionally does and ended up, you know, getting like 3 million views in a month.
And, wow, that's awesome.
And so then from that, I sort of expanded it into this book where I include a lot of, you know, pictures and entries and stories and sort of form some sort of narrative from it. But it's a lot of kind of looking back at the 90s and at that age when you're 11, you take yourself so seriously. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was lucky enough to have a pretty happy childhood, so any kind of minor drama became extremely blown out of proportion. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of that. And it's also the time where you kind of like experiment with saying curse words and like talking about sex in a way that, cause you've saw an episode of 30 something and feel like you like understand the world in a new way. So you got to get that down on paper.
Do you still keep diaries?
I do, sort of on and off. I'm not as consistent as I was when I was 11, unfortunately.
Isn't that crazy? Now you're like professional. And
I know. It's like, because from like 1990 to 1992, every day I wrote a page. That's and it's kind of been on and off. I kept them through college. And those are just like painfully, it's like too soon to look back and laugh, really, because it's like a little too unfortunate. Because I thought I was like a great poet, a poet, and it's not, it just wasn't. And so I kind of write on and off probably every 3 or 4 days. My grandma, actually, she wrote in her diary every day of her life from when she was a young girl, and has volumes and volumes.
Have you read them?
No, I haven't. I don't know that I ever will get to.
So she hasn't let anybody see them?
No, I don't think so.
That would be so fascinating.
I know.
You could really see where you come from.
Yeah, she was like a teacher in a rural one-room schoolhouse. And,
in old Nebraska, with hurricanes going by. And
there's stuff,
cows.
Like, you know, when she was a girl, it was like the Depression, living on a farm in Nebraska. And then going, you know, without indoor plumbing.
You got to get a hold of these and publish
them. I know. Yeah.
We'll my see. Grandma's story, you know?
Yeah, my grandma's diaries.
That's so amazing. How many people ever get to see something like that?
Yeah, it's kind of insane. I want to get my hands on them just to look back at, like, you know, certain days in history, like the day they landed on the moon or JFK was shot or, you know, and see what her reaction was.
I was out milking the cows and somebody said we landed on the moon. Oh, well.
Woo-wee. Oh, well.
It would be just funny if they were completely unextraordinary.
JFK got shot. Oh, well.
Oh, my, oh, my.
My, oh, my.
Time to get the jello salad ready.
Yeah. If she was just unimpressed by any historical event. Whoop-dee-doo.
We won World War II, but what else is new? All right. Dawn's book is about looking back, so Alex picked a philosopher who focused on how the past affects the present, and that is Chrysippus. Chrysippus of Sali. Of Sali. One of the characters from Tony and Tina.
Yeah.
It's in Greece.
Okay.
He lived from 279 to 206 BC. He was a Greek Stoic philosopher. What does that mean, Stoic? Doesn't that just mean he was like very stiff?
Yeah, like I feel like I know. I feel like he had good posture if you're Stoic, you know.
Yeah. He's a native of Sali, Cilicia, but moved to Athens as a young man, where he became a pupil of Cleanthes. I think that's how to say it. In the Stoic school. I wouldn't want to go to the Stoic school.
No, that sounds so boring.
Oh, man, everything is sterile and stoic.
Yeah.
It just sounds like it goes together. It's very sterile and stoic in here. When Cleanthes died around 230 BC, Chrysippus became the third head of the school. A prolific writer, Chrysippus expanded the fundamental doctrines of Zeno, of Citium. That guy sounds cool.
Yeah.
That's a great name, Zeno.
Zeno. He was the life of the party for sure.
Right?
Yeah.
It also kind of sounds like a health bar.
Yeah.
Let me get one of those Zenos. It's full of protein. The founder of the school, which earned him the title of the second founder of Stoicism. Chrysippus excelled in logic, the theory of knowledge, ethics, and physics. He created an original system of propositional logic in order to better understand the workings of the universe and role of humanity within it. That's cool. I never did anything like that.
Yeah, me neither.
I've tried to understand it, but I never came up with my own system of logic. Ooh.
I know.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty impressive.
That's determination. He adhered to a deterministic view of fate, but nevertheless sought a role for personal freedom in thought and action. Ethics, he taught, depended on understanding the nature of the universe, and he taught a therapy of extirpating the unruly passions which depress and crush the soul. Yeah, there are things that depress and crush the soul.
Yeah, the Stoic school.
Unruly passions. I wonder if that means like sex or...
Yeah, I can't imagine what else.
You think there's a correlation between sex and the soul?
I don't know that it crushes the soul.
If it gets a little too unruly?
I mean, I don't know. Maybe I haven't lived enough, but I feel like it's, you know, a positive thing for the soul.
Did you go to church a lot as a kid?
I did, yeah. A Lutheran church every week.
What makes it Lutheran?
I guess it's very, very, very similar to Catholicism, but without the emphasis on Mary. And yeah, but you have the Trinity of the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost.
It's from Martin Luther, though, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know much about him, but I know he was no fan of the Jewish people. Martin Luther, did you know that?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Is there an anti-Jewish feeling in a Lutheran church or no?
I don't think so. For many years, I dated a Jewish guy, and I was kind of terrified about like what my grandparents would think. But
really,
they were fans. I think they like think of the Jews as the chosen people,
really?
And like have a nice. Certain amount of respect.
So he met them.
Yeah.
So it was serious.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. How many years were you with him?
4 or 5.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
Did you live together?
No.
All right. Well, wasn't that serious then?
Yeah.
He came back to Nebraska with you? I guess this was in New York, right?
Yeah.
You don't find Jews in Nebraska. We already covered that.
It's true. There are not many.
So what was it like?
It was good. I think the like main difference is like, yeah, like he was from New York and like a real like New York Jew, and that sounds stereotypical, but whatever stereotype you have of that, that was him. Like very like charming and outgoing and talkative and very intelligent. And I think the men in my family didn't know what to do with him, really. Because, like, men in Nebraska are oftentimes, or at least the ones in my family, a lot more quiet, a few words, like sitting around on the couch and watching the game.
Real white people.
Real white people. And, like, it's not, like, overly affectionate and talkative and, like, you know, so he kind of had, I think, what by Nebraska terms were more like kind of female characteristics, because he was talkative and like affectionate and charming in a way that not a lot of like Nebraska farmers are.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That they would see it as female.
I think a little bit.
Huh.
Yeah. But they all liked him. He's a really nice guy.
Football is right up there with the church, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's huge. Yeah, it's sort of a religion of its own.
Would you say the Holy Trinity of Nebraska is the church, football, and cello?
Yes. Yes, it's like Husker football and, Yeah.
What's Husker football?
That's the college team. We are very far from having any kind of professional sports team in Nebraska. So mm-hmm. there's the college, University of Nebraska, Cornhuskers are like, that's the religion.
Wow. Because corn is a huge, I imagine, a huge export of Nebraska, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So are you still, do you still go to church?
No, I don't.
Do you think if you still lived in Nebraska, you probably would?
Probably.
I think for a lot of people, religion is also entertainment.
Yeah, I think I think also in Nebraska, especially in some of these smaller towns, it's also so much a part of the community. Mm. It's your social life and it's your friends, and you know, it's people go there to be a part of the community.
Because it's entertainment. Community is entertainment.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same thing. It's why, you know, other people go to hang out at UCB or at certain bars. It's where all their friends are. And it
fulfills that need to socialize. You also see a show, which is the preacher. You know, that's a show.
It is, yeah.
And you're like, oh, you stay in... It's like a TV show. You like to see the same characters, the recurring... You know, what's going to happen?
What's going to happen this week at communion? I think also, oh my God, there's a turtle right there. Sorry. Oh, yeah. It scared me. There's a turtle on the floor.
It's technically a tortoise.
Oh, okay.
Not to be a snob.
I don't know the difference.
A tortoise is a land animal and a turtle is a water animal.
Well, all right. You learn something new every day.
Turtles also go on land, but tortoises don't go in the water.
Oh, okay.
So.
Good to know.
Now you know.
Tortoise. Yeah, I think also in those smaller communities, I feel like people feel pressured to go to church to fit in. Like, I think you're kind of ostracized as like, oh, that family doesn't go to church, or like looked down upon.
They're not part of the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
What the hell are they doing? They're not part of the show. That's also like part of the appeal of getting them to go to the church. It's like, we need new cast members.
It's true.
I see it all as show business. we need someone like that at the church or at the temple. That would be an interesting dynamic.
That'd be a great episode.
Yeah. How would that person interact with that lady that we know? Ooh, that would be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I never even thought about that. People people who aren't part of the show, and you're like, damn it, how do we get them in the show?
Yeah.
All right. Well.
Back to Chrysippus.
Chrysippus initiated the success of Stoicism as one of the most influential philosophical movements for centuries in the Greek and Roman world. Chrysippus believes everything is determined by fate. By fate, he means events that have preceded it, often called the causal nexus, which also sounds like a protein bar.
Yeah.
Can you pass a nexus?
Hey, I just was on the treadmill for an hour. I really need a nexus right now. Gotta get some protein.
Every event that led to your existence is linked together, thus making you a result of many causes. That's true. You will also be a cause of other things that occur by your actions. This lends itself to the view that the universe, while containing many moving parts, is a whole, and the parts only come into consideration in terms of how they depend on each other. Detractors claim that if everything is determined by cause and effect, that our actions don't matter. For example, if you fall ill, you would not have to see a doctor because your healing is out of your control. But Chrysippus counterclaims that there is a difference between simple and complex predestination. Being sick is a simple predestination because it happens by luck of the draw. But for recovery, consulting the doctor, medicine, etc., must all occur. I think we're all on board with that.
Yeah.
These causes are all interconnected, quote, co-fated events. Therefore, our response of calling the doctor is fate acting through us, not us defying it. No matter what we do, we are always agents of fate. Well, I guess I agree with him. You know, I believe there are certain things that are fated for you, but, you know, a few years ago I was feeling very confused about where I was in life. Mm-hmm. And I went to see a mystical rabbi.
Wow.
And I asked him, I said, I always felt like I was destined for greatness. I said, am I destined for greatness? He laughed and he goes, no. He said, greatness is achieved. Hmm. He said, nobody's destined for greatness. You can achieve greatness, he said, but you can't sit back and wait for greatness to happen.
I think that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
You know, I think there, of course, are certain things that are out of your control. You can get in a car crash by someone else hitting you out of nowhere. You can, you know, people can get cancer or, you know, things can befall you that are not within your control. But I think certain things are within your control, and you can decide, you know, this is the kind of person I'm going to be. I'm going to make this huge, scary leap. I'm not going to settle, or I am going to settle. And, you know, taking responsibility for your situation, regardless of what that is, I think even taking responsibility for it when unfortunate things have happened, and mm-hmm. owning it and saying, this is what I have to work with.
Have you had experiences mm-hmm. like that?
I guess it's funny because probably the most tragic thing that happened to me happened when I was very small. When I was 2, almost 3, my birth parents and one of my brothers passed away in a plane crash. And so I was adopted early on by my aunt and uncle, who I always have called Mom and Dad.
That's a pretty big thing.
Yeah. And I think that is like that. Of course, that sounds like so tragic and like crazy. But I think because I was so young, I don't remember it. My aunt and uncle have always been my parents. And I had this very, very normal upbringing. But I guess that was this crazy situation that happened to me.
Wow. That is a very big deal.
Yeah. But
do you think about it often?
No, very, very rarely. And I think I could like dwell on that or find my situation unfortunate or whatever, but what's the point? You know, like I could dwell in the past, or same with, I mean, not that this is to that scale, but you can think about like breakups or jobs you didn't get or times you got fired or like things that just sort of suck, and you can really like dwell on them and let them like destroy like a part of yourself. But and that's easy to do, and certainly you have to for a little while to dwell on that, to, you know, come to terms with it. But I don't know, I think you kind of just have to own it and be like, okay, this happened, here I am, like let's move forward.
You just get on with it.
Yeah.
And are you curious about?
That's probably easy saying, because like I said, I haven't had something horribly, horribly tragic. I haven't lost someone, you know, that I was very, very close to, you know, aside from obviously when I was very small. But
you don't remember your real parents.
Yeah. And so I think it's very easy to be like, get on with it when, you know, haven't had like a loved one die of cancer or had to see, you know, anything that, luckily, you know, anything so tragic and horrible as that.
You realize you had a superhero's childhood.
Yeah, like, I know it was very normal.
But like, I think it's abnormal because like, it was Batman normal. And stuff, you know.
Oh yeah, they're always orphans.
Yeah, you're raised by your aunt and uncle as Superman, right? Not his real parents.
Yeah.
Spider-Man.
Oh, man, I wish I had a power.
You probably do. Maybe you just haven't figured it out
yet. I have, like, the ability to reach things on high shelves. I don't think that's special.
I think there's a power there that you got to tap into. I mean, you've got...
Oh, man.
You've got all the makings to be Super Don.
I like it.
That's amazing. So you're not, do you ever get curious about your real parents and try and find out, like, about...
A little bit. Like, since I was adopted by my aunt and uncle, I've always, like, grown up around, like, my family and learning. I always kind of knew about them and saw pictures. And actually, a couple years ago, one of my cousins found these tapes that my uncle was in the military for a while and lived in Turkey. And rather than, like, writing letters back and forth, they... recorded these tapes that they sent back and forth. And so I, my cousin found these, and there's tapes of my parents speaking and like laughing. So I got to hear what their voices were like and hear what their laugh sounded like. It was weird. I had the tapes for a few months before I listened to them because I wasn't sure how I would react. I sort of just don't think about that much, or I've sort of just put that behind me. And I was like, wow, my parents' voices are on these tapes.
It makes it real again.
Huh? Yeah. And, but I listened to them, and it was good. It was a good experience. And, you know, it's weird because, like, my mom's laugh is like my laugh, and that was creepy and weird and, kind of cool. But they were talking about very mundane things, like, you know, going into Lincoln to get a pantsuit and like.
Right. Do you ever wonder how different you might have turned out had you been raised by them?
Yeah, I think my life would have been very different. They were farmers on, you know, out near where my grandparents lived, and I would have grown up on a farm in a really small town. I think my life would have been quite different. In being raised by my aunt and uncle, they were always very, very encouraging of whatever pursuit we had. And I remember when I was in high school, the thought occurred to me, maybe, because in Lincoln, most people go to college and they stay in Nebraska, and, you know, it's a great place. There's nothing wrong with that. But, I remember having this thought, like, maybe I could go to Kansas City one day. Like, I could go and live in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. And my aunt said to me, well, yeah, or you could do New York or LA or, you know, another country, wherever. And she just said it very offhandedly. And it really hadn't occurred to me that I could do that. And I think they were very, very encouraging of us to leave and try other things, and knowing that we could come back if we wanted, but to just try living in a completely different place and doing whatever.
They got rid of you.
We could. They got rid of us. Hey, wait a second. Please go a lot further away than Kansas City. And I think as a result of having them specifically as parents, I did a lot of stuff that I might not have done, you know, had I been raised by my birth parents.
Maybe they give you more freedom because there was a little bit of a detachment in that you weren't actually their kid. So
yeah, but I don't think, I feel like I was always as much of their child as my sister, who was their birth child.
And your brother was your biological brother.
Yeah, because they treated her, you know, they encouraged her in the same way. And she also went away and went to Brown and then went to Seattle. And
feel there was a difference. They were.
No, not like I never
did a great
detected
job. That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, they're very awesome people. And I can't imagine, they were like 27 or something and all of a sudden had three kids under the age of four to deal with.
So, wow.
You don't like. I don't know. Only kind of recently did that occur to me. Like, wait a second.
Your brother's older, right?
Yeah.
So I wonder if it hit him harder.
I think so. He had like a little more trouble developmentally, and he had like speech problems for a while and started school a little late and then ended up, you know, being totally normal, but had to kind of, I think, emotionally and developmentally it hit him much harder because he was four and a half or something when it happened.
And you had another brother you said that you lost with your parents. Was he older or younger?
He was older. He was seven.
Mm-hmm. What was, can I ask?
Yeah.
What was the plane? Where was it going?
It was my father was a pilot. The business was crop dusting, aerial spraying. Mm-hmm. And so my father had his own like other plane that went, and they would always take little trips and stuff with it. And they had been to visit some relatives of ours in Delaware, and then were coming back, and somehow there was some sort of fog or storm, and they crashed in West Virginia in the mountain range.
That's horrible. And
yeah, it what a kind of unique thing. Well, many unique things, but one is they were actually, there was some rescuers looking for a recovery, trying to look for another plane that had gone down in the area when they found my parents' plane. So there was two planes that went down in the same area at the same time. So there was some set of, you know, weather circumstances or whatever that made this.
Do you remember anything surrounding it?
No, I don't.
It's all.
I think I was just a little too young. I have very like vague memories from shortly after. Like, we lived in this house with my aunt and uncle for 6 months or so after it happened, and I have a few memories of that house, but those are my earliest memories.
And you don't remember any signs of superpower?
Well, I used to be able to float, and I never thought about that.
I mean, it really is. It does sound like a comic book. You're in Nebraska. There's these fields. I think Superman used to run through big fields.
Yeah, maybe I'm like, I can shuck corn really fast, and I don't know.
Yeah.
Well. All
right. Well, I'm going to give you a little bit of Chrysippus. I think this was a really good pick in Philosopher in terms of a guy who talked about how the past affects the present. In terms of what we're talking about right now, it seems like it was really more spot on than we even thought.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that you published a book about the past.
Yeah. It's funny, like, with that book, too, because, I don't know, I had spent so long in New York for, you know, trying to create comedy and writing and acting and stuff. And, you know, I made a living at it on and off for the whole time I was there, which I was lucky to do. But that, by far, posting those diary entries from when I was 11 and writing about them is by far what kind of took off and got the most attention of anything I've done. And it's just weird that something I did when I was 11 was more successful than anything I've done as an adult. And maybe I shouldn't admit that, but...
Well, you did do it as an adult. You just drew from your past.
Yeah, yeah. You know? But I think it's sometimes the things that are the most authentically you tend to get the most attention or do the best.
Yeah.
And that was something I had that was more me than, you know, any sketch group I've been a part of or, you know, thing that I've worked on.
It was very honest. I think that's what it is. When we saw the show, it really resonated. I asked Kylie. Kylie never laughs out loud at anything. I said, after the show, I said, you laughed out loud a lot. I mean, I did too, but I said, you know, I've never seen you laugh at a comedy show. Like, what was it? And she said, it just really resonated with me. It was like, it really was relatable.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it is. It's just so honest and relatable and vulnerable.
Yeah. That
people read it. It's the writings... You know, it's really letting people in on the embarrassingly, you know, the makeup of you.
Yeah.
Everybody's always trying to pretend that they're so special and advanced and this and that. And this is like, well, here's the nuts and bolts of who I am.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, a lot of just, I guess you could almost say embarrassing, but it's not really. It's just real.
Yeah.
And I think it's, everyone has very deep down the same insecurities and the same... things that they're proud of. But I think a lot of people in their diaries aren't that honest, especially when they're young. They write what they wish was the case, or they mm-hmm. write it as though someone else is reading it instead of just like the kind of unfortunate reality of the situation of your awkward face.
I think it's very pure and innocent, too. I like that about it.
Yeah.
It comes from...
I was very naive and sheltered, I think.
It's cool. I maybe the... That's so weird that... What if Joe Franklin, instead of being creepy when he did that...
Mm-hmm.
What if it was your actual dad channeling, just using Joe Franklin as a vessel?
Whoa. Daddy's gonna take care of you, and it's Joe Franklin.
What if, like, Joe Franklin never really existed as his own person
ever?
He
was just, like, a messenger for, like, deceased.
He was a body that other spirits inhabited.
Whoa. This conversation has gotten so intense.
And that's why he never did anything sexual or anything. He just wanted time with his daughter.
Yeah, and see, like, he's, like, put on these big patent leather red platform shoes. I wanted you to have them. There's things I never told you about me. And,
He just wanted to buy you some dinners and take you to some shows. And then he left Joe Franklin's body back to talking about Groucho Marx and whatever.
Yeah.
All right. Here's a paragraph. I'll ask you to read a paragraph.
Yeah, I'd love to. Okay. If any motion exists without a cause, then not every proposition will be either true or false. For that which has not efficient causes is neither true nor false. But every proposition is either true or false. Therefore, there is no motion without a cause. And if this is so, then all effects owe their existence to prior causes. And if this is so, all things happen by fate. It follows, therefore, that whatever happens, happens by fate. I think the word that sticks out to me in this paragraph is the word cause. And that's what I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around, saying that he says everything happens by fate, and yet he keeps talking about causes, and I think of a cause as something you actively do. You decide to cause a reaction. Although, now I'm looking at it, and it's the first sentence is if any motion exists without a cause, then not every proposition will be either true or false. For that which has not efficient causes... is neither true or false. All right.
I'm not quite sure I get
sorry.
It.
Sorry, I think I misinterpreted. I didn't...
No, it's not just you. It's very confusing. All right, let's try and break it down.
Okay.
If any motion exists without a cause, so if anything happens without something causing it, then not every proposition will be either true or false.
Oh, so maybe it just has to do with the gray area of... if something random happens, then, like, something that it's not for a reason. It's not black and white. It's not true or false.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. If something happens without a cause...
like, a random act doesn't necessarily mean something.
Right. Okay.
It's random.
For that which has not efficient causes... is neither true nor false. Right. He's just repeating himself.
Mm-hmm.
Too wordy, Chrysippus. But every proposition is either true or false. He's saying everything is either true or false. Ah, so then he's going to use deductive reasoning to say, since everything is true or false, then therefore every motion exists with a cause. Therefore, there is no motion without a cause. And if this is so, then all effects owe their existence to a prior cause. So, this is a God argument, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that exists came from something. Nothing comes from nothing.
Right.
And if this is so, all things happen by fate. It follows, therefore, that whatever happens, happens by fate. So, if you exist because of fate, then everything is fate.
Or everything is a result of all of the causes and reactions before that. So all of the, what you think are maybe decisions that you make, but are the way your life turns out is a series of small causes and reactions that it seems like you don't have control over.
It's kind of like a pinball game.
Yeah.
Like you shoot the ball into the pinball machine. And then once it's in motion, there's really no stopping it. And everything it hits is going to change the course of the ball's direction, you know?
Yeah.
But then you have those little levers, you know, those little things that you can kind of hit the ball around with along the way.
To give you some sense that you are in control.
Mm-hmm. And you can kind of direct the ball a little bit with those things, but, you know, to an extent that thing has already been set in motion and it's going to do what it's going to do. You can direct it here and there along the board of the pinball machine, kind of like life.
Yeah.
Do you want to read the quotes?
Yeah, I want to read them.
All right.
Okay, here we go. If I knew that it was fated for me to be sick, I would even wish for it. For the foot also, if it had intelligence, would volunteer to get muddy.
Hmm.
If you know something is fated to happen that's bad, you just want to almost have it happen. And I think more than that, know that it's going to happen so you can deal with it better.
Yeah. I also was thinking, like, you know, what if you could live a whole life and never get sick? I mean, nobody wants to get really sick. Mm-hmm. But it would be weird to, like, always be healthy. You would never really appreciate it, right?
Yeah.
Like, the foot would volunteer to get muddy. It's like a foot's got to get muddy sometimes. You got to get dirty. Just, like, you gotta go on creepy dates with Joe Franklin, you know?
You have to. It's a requirement.
Like, what is life if you don't have these weird stories and these struggles and things? It's just not... It's just not a life. You have to have, I mean, hopefully your struggles are minimal, but I don't know. It's just interesting. I'm just thinking so much about what you said about your birth parents dying and how you wound up being raised and going out to New York City and becoming a comedian. And it's so much like, it just resonates so much with me with what we're reading and just fate.
Right.
You probably wouldn't even be here on this couch if your parents...
Hadn't died.
Maybe that would be a good thing. I mean, it's not the best couch.
No, I mean, it's a great couch. It's very comfortable.
Thank you.
No, I think it's weird to think that an event that happens when you're 2 years old can shape where you end up. But I think that's true. And I, you know, it's not a good thing or a bad thing. Maybe I would be living a more fulfilling and happy life if in another place, but you know, you just have to look at the cards you're dealt and the life you end up with. And for me, I feel pretty thankful for it, even if, you know, I'm not thankful my parents died, but I'm thankful that I was adopted by amazing people.
The pinball was set in motion.
Yeah,
man, it's so crazy. Like, you are where you are because things happened that were out of your control. It is all like fate with some control within it.
Yeah.
Maybe your superhero power is keeping diaries.
That would be such a disappointing superhero power.
You just keep excellent diaries. They're so honest and funny and vulnerable.
I'm just really... honest about my situation.
Well, you didn't get to fly and you don't have the laser eyes, but
yeah, but man, I'm really self-aware.
it's a good power. The power of self-awareness is nothing to downplay, really, because I've met people who are very unself-aware, and it is a disability. It's really sad. You know people like that, and you're like, they don't realize that they're
a little out of touch with reality.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. Okay, here's the next quote. The non-destruction of one's coat is not fated simply, but co-fated with its being taken care of. It will be in our power, with what is in our power being included in fate.
I guess that just means maintaining your coat, right?
Yeah.
Let's take it very literally. Let's say it is a coat that he's talking about that you wear, like a raincoat.
Okay.
And you don't destroy it. Then what? What is he saying?
Is not fated simply, but co-fated with its being taken care of.
You ever have any kind of like piece of clothing and it gets wear and tear?
Yeah.
But if you maintain it, you have to work very hard consciously to maintain it if you want to keep it nice.
Right. And that is within your control.
That's within your control. But it's not co-fated that it's going to stay nice without you putting forth the effort.
Right.
Okay.
It's up to you.
And what does it say the rest is?
It will be in our power, with what is in our power being included in fate.
I get it. Fate is a combination of cause and effect, and we can end our effort.
Right.
So fate is not just, it's those little levers in the pinball machine. It's not just like you have no choice in the matter.
Right.
The ball gets set in motion, but you can direct it. That's fate.
Right.
Fate is a combination of what you can't control and what you can control.
I think that's spot on.
I hope so. Anyway, it's the best I can do with it.
I like it.
All right.
I agree.
Thank you. All right. What's the last quote?
The last quote. The universe itself is God and the universal outpouring of its soul.
The first part makes sense because if God created the universe, then everything in the universe is God.
Right.
Nothing isn't God. Especially, you know, you talk about God's oneness. Everything is one. God is one. We are God. The universe is God. This chair is God. There can't be anything besides God.
Right. Everything that exists in the universe. The universe itself is God.
Mm-hmm. So, if you were to meet God and be a separate entity than God, let's say there was God plus you, you'd be meeting the whole universe. Like, let's say you shrunk the whole universe and made it, like, so you can meet it and shake its hand.
Mm-hmm.
But then you looked really deep into it and you could see, like, with a microscope, people on a planet and another planet and stars and animals running through the Serengeti or whatever and oceans. And then you can zoom out and just, like, you see, like, floating planets in space and zoom out and who knows what else we can't even see. The whole universe. That's God.
Mm-hmm.
But what does he mean by the second part? And the outpouring?
The universal outpouring of its soul.
So he's saying, and the universal outpouring of its soul.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't even know what outpouring of a soul is.
Well, if you're... What confuses me is if the universe itself is God, like that, if you take the universe to be everything that exists, that being God, and then you're saying it's also the universal outpouring of its soul, then isn't the outpouring of its soul also part of the universe? I don't know.
I don't know. He got us on that last one.
Yeah.
Damn you, Chrysippus.
It's probably actually extremely simple. And
maybe you just thought it had a good jingle to it.
It does. It has, like, it sounds good, but
and
I don't know how to.
The pouring of its soul. Plug it in, plug it in. All right, Dawn, this was a pleasure.
This was awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, and congratulations on your book, My 1992 Diary. Where can people pick it up?
You can get it wherever books are sold, on Amazon, anywhere.
At a yard sale?
Anywhere in the universe. No, actually, that's probably not true. You can
ever,
get it at
books are sold. They sell books
Barnes
at CVS.
Noble.
I don't think it's at CVS,
yeah.
Dawn. I'm sorry.
It's not. It's probably not at the airport. Okay, so it's actually probably only available on Amazon and at Barnes & Noble, and I can't really speak to anywhere else.
That would be really cool. If anywhere books were sold, it was there.
That's what the marketing people told me to say. They're like, you can say available wherever books are sold. But I had that same thought. I'm like, I don't think that's true.
Yeah. Books are sold at in the church basement at the flea market. Is it there?
I hope not.
It would be so cool. That would make it the most popular book of all time.
I don't think it's quite there.
Ever books are so...
It's basically only available on Amazon and at Barnes & Noble, I think.
Don, I'm in the Grand Bazaar here in Saudi Arabia. I'm at the book stand looking for my 1992 diary.
I heard on that podcast that you said I could get this book here, and I don't see it.
Why did you lie to me? All right, this was a lot of fun. Thanks.
This was so great. Thank you very much.
All right, everybody. There you go. There you have it. That's our show. Thank you again to Don Luby for doing the show. Very funny. Very funny, Don. I hope you pick up her book. I'm sorry I'm a little out of it from the accident. I'm doing my best. I'm pulling through, and I'll be okay. But I will stumble on some words. Pick up her 1992 diary. That's her book that is out now. Not wherever books are sold. I thought it was a great show. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was so interesting. Like, there's just so much you don't understand or know about a person, like, right off the bat. I mean, also when she's talking about her parents, and she wasn't talking about her parents. She was talking about her adopted parents. And, I mean, there's just so many layers to people. And I thought it was fascinating just the idea of how events that happen to you shape who you are and shape your life. And it got me thinking about my own life. About what events have shaped my life to lead me to where I am today. And I hope this car accident will shape my life in a good way too. Maybe I'll gain a better perspective on life, and maybe I'll come out stronger after physical therapy and stuff. I'm going to be optimistic about it, because something like this could depress you, and it could bring you down easily, and I recognize that. And I was like, thinking to myself when it happened, I'm not going to let this destroy me. I'm going to fight through it with humor and get through it and recover quickly and get back on the ball and keep preaching about chickens and doing whatever the hell I do. So that's it. If you can make a donation to the show, it certainly would help everything in the world of Danny Lobel. And you could do that by going to moderndayphilosophers.net. I have this painting that I'm going to be sending out to people who make a donation of $30 or more. Numbered prints of this painting of my favorite jazz musician, Sidney Bechet. And I'm almost done with the painting. It should be done by the end of the week, which is exciting. Especially now that I'm not leaving the house too much this week, I can paint. And that's it. Write me at thecomical@yahoo.com. Say hello. You know I love to hear from you. You know I love to hear from you. Send me an email. And have a great week. Next week is the season finale. The season finale. Oh, it's going to be a good one. Oh, you're going to love it. I'm on Twitter at Danny Lobel. I never say that. Why don't I ever say that? You should follow me. Bye-bye.